Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, December 14th, 2010. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Moscow Intermodal Transit Center could be built by 2012. Elderly Tacoma anti-war protesters face 10 years in prison. And Washington Department of Revenue considers taxing medical marijuana. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Idaho Fish and Game Director Calvin Groen pled guilty today to trespassing while taking part in a hunt near Elk City. Groen said he was helping hunting partners track an elk when the party went on land that where Groen had hunted before. Magistrate Randall Robinson in Grangeville said Groen a withheld judgment and a $500 fine. Groen said the lesson he learned is not to assume you have permission to go on land, even if you've hunted there before. Groen said the land ownership had changed since he had last hunted on the parcel. The U.S. Security and Exchange Commission has suspended trading of Alternative Energy Holdings Incorporated, which is the Eagle firm that wants to build a nuclear power plant in Idaho. The federal agency said the suspension is, quote, about the accuracy and adequacy of publicly disseminated information concerning the stock sales of certain AEHI officers. The suspension will run at least until Tuesday, December 28th. Last week, the Payette County Planning and Zoning Commission approved a rezone of 5,000 acres of farmland in the county where the company wants to build the reactor, but that rezone is subject to approval by the Payette County Commissioners. The company has also sought approval to build their nuclear power plant at several other locations in southwestern Idaho. Fourth District Judge Thomas Neville sentenced 35-year-old Angie Evans of Boise to up to 7 years in prison for felony abandonment of a child. Evans was found to have abandoned her 7-year-old son at the Boise Music Festival. In court, Evans admitted to leaving her developmentally delayed son in the crowd of 50,000 to go up to the front of the crowd to seek autographs and dance. Under Neville's sentence, the Idaho Department of Correction will evaluate her for the next 6 months before determining whether she should spend the rest of the 7 years in prison or on probation. Spokane police have agreed to forego a 4% raise for a year and agreed to other contract concessions in order to save 35 police department jobs. The agreement between the city and the police union includes increasing out-of-pocket health costs, a reduction in taxpayer-funded retirement plans, and the police will also have to pay more for medical coverage. Although officers will not get the 4% across the board raise, they will still get raises based on seniority. A new study by the University of Washington is challenging what is believed about phosphorus discharges in the Spokane River. UW engineering professor Michael Brett says not all of the phosphorus going into the river adds to algae blooms, and because some of the phosphorus is in a different molecular form, that algae cannot break down to feed the growth. Furthermore, Brett says effluent treatments appear to target the bioavailable forms of algae, which means the treatments are more effective than originally thought. The study at the Spokane Wastewater Treatment Plant reduces total phosphorus levels from 500 parts per billion to 50 parts per billion, but reduces bioavailable phosphorus from 400 parts per billion to only 10 parts per billion. Those who discharge pollutants into the river want the new information taken into account by the Washington Department of Ecology when they set discharge limits. You're listening to Evening Report. I'm Lee Robartis with Susan Austin.
The U.S. Attorney's Office announced yesterday that a federal jury in Tacoma convicted five anti-war activists, including a Jesuit priest and an 84-year-old nun, for breaking into Naval Base Kitsap, Bangor, to protest the nuclear weapons stored there. 82-year-old Reverend Bill Bishel of Tacoma, 60-year-old Reverend Stephen Kelly, a Jesuit priest from Oakland, California, 84-year-old Sister Ann Montgomery of Redwood City, California, 67-year-old Susan Crane, a retired school teacher from Baltimore, Maryland, and 60-year-old Lynn Greenwald, a social worker from Bremerton, were convicted of conspiracy, trespassing, and destruction of government property. They are scheduled to be sentenced on March 28th and face up to 10 years in prison. The defendants admitted they broke into the base on November 2, 2009, using bolt cutters to cut through the three chain-link fences to enter an area where nuclear warheads are stored. But Bishel said there was no malicious intent. Bishel has protested at the naval base in the past and served about 16 months in prison for other demonstrations, saying, quote, "We weren't there to maliciously destroy a fence. We were there to make it known that these weapons exist." Bishel said the protesters were behind the perimeter fence line for about 4.5 hours before they cut through the final two fences and military personnel responded to an alarm. The armed guards ordered the banner-carrying activists to the ground and placed bags over their heads so they could not view any more of the secure area. Arlen Storm, the assistant U.S. attorney who prosecuted the case, said the protesters went too far when they made their way into a secure area, quote, endangering themselves and military guards when those who seek to exercise their right to protest violate the rights of others. They must be held accountable under the law. The protesters wanted to focus their defense last week on their motivation for breaking into the base, but they were barred from submitting arguments that called the weapons illegal under international law. They were also prohibited by U.S. District Judge Benjamin Settle from arguing that they were compelled to break in out of necessity to save lives. Crane said after the trial, quote, "We should have been able to talk about our intent. We should have been able to say that we did this because these weapons are illegal, because these weapons could destroy all of the earth. This isn't just a trespassing trial. It's about where we are as far as nuclear weapons." Several peace activists testified during the four-day trial, including Stephen Leeper, chairman of the Peace Cultural Foundation in Hiroshima. A retired Navy captain also testified about the destructive power of nuclear warheads. He told the jury he was troubled during his career knowing that a nuclear weapon would inevitably kill innocent civilians. Crane said the defendants have not yet decided whether to appeal. Bishel said he was dismayed by the verdict, but said he was encouraged by people who showed support during the trial, saying, quote, "In no way at all does the verdict dampen our work or a determination to work for the abolition of nuclear weapons."
Washington Governor Chris Gregoire is asking the legislature to make cuts in pensions and health care in order to help the state with its $5 billion deficit during the next two-year budget. Gregoire said yesterday some of the fastest-growing costs in the state budget are pensions and health care. The governor said her proposal would put the state, quote, on a more stable financial course for the long term. She says her proposal would save the state $11 billion over the next 25 years, including $368 million during the 2011 to 2013 biennium, and cut the state's unfunded pension liability of $7 billion by nearly 60%. The pension plans affected were closed to new members in 1977, but in 1995, the legislature voted to allow for inflation protection in the plans and left open the option to amend or repeal the changes. In Gregoire's proposed plan, affected employees would lose about $600 per year. This would total $9 billion over the 25-year period. The Washington Federation of State Employees, which represents 42,000 employees, opposes the idea. WFSE Director Greg Devereaux said, "To take it away from pensioners now seems unfair." Devereaux says the union also opposes Gregoire's plan to end early retirement incentives for future state employees who are in later pension plans. Gregoire said That would save the state and local governments $2.2 billion over the next 25 years. Another proposed cut would close a loophole that allows state employees to retire and then return to work, collecting both wages and pensions from the state.
The Washington State Department of Revenue has launched a statewide effort to collect sales tax from medical marijuana dispensaries, even if some prosecutors and the Washington State Health Department maintain that such dispensaries are illegal. Washington Revenue Department spokesman Mike Gaurilo said today that the Revenue Department mailed letters to 90 dispensaries and related organizations on Friday. The letters demand tax payments from dispensaries and say that medical marijuana is not exempt from state sales tax and that dispensaries must collect that money and turn it over to the state. The letters also demand payment of the state business and occupational tax. Gaurilo said the issue came up when his department was contacted by a medical marijuana dispensary that was collecting sales tax and said many of their competitors weren't. Gaurilo said department workers then, quote, went on the web and tried to come up with all the names and addresses of medical marijuana dispensaries to inform them that they are required to charge sales tax, end quote. The letter said medical marijuana isn't exempt from the tax, as prescription medications are, because it can't be prescribed under state and federal law. Washington's law instead requires a, quote, authorization from a medical professional. The news, first reported by the Associated Press, upset medical marijuana activists. Dale Rogers, director of the Compassion Program, a nonprofit patient collective in Seattle, said he was worried about the added burden of paying sales tax on medical marijuana for low-income patients, such as those with multiple sclerosis or AIDS, saying, quote, I don't know where this is coming from. The fiscal responsibility is falling on the most poor and the sickest, and that is not fair, end quote. Seattle medical marijuana attorney Douglas Hyatt noted that authorities in some counties continue to raid dispensaries and prosecute their operators, while those in other counties, including King County, the state's largest, have allowed them to stay in business. Hyatt said requiring dispensaries to register with the state and pay state sales tax could expose those involved to criminal prosecution in violation of their Fifth Amendment right to avoid self-incrimination. Green Hope Patient Network organizer Laura Healy summed up the paradox by saying, quote, how do you tax something that we're technically not allowed to sell? You can't have it both ways.
Lawmakers in Olympia approved more cuts from Washington State University's current budget during the special session on Saturday. This year's WSU budget was cut an additional $7.48 million as the state continues to wrestle with a $1.1 billion shortfall in projected revenues for the current biennium. University President Elson Floyd said of the changes, it is clear that the state is in a dire financial circumstance. This cut is yet another reflection of the difficulties lawmakers face in balancing the state's budget with no end to the crisis in sight. State leaders reduced WSU's 2010 to 2011 budget by $13.5 million last spring, and Governor Chris Gregoire instituted another $11.2 million in holdbacks this fall. This latest budget reduction has President Floyd talking about a major restructuring of the university in order to, quote, reflect the state's continuing fiscal crisis. Since July of 2009, WSU's state appropriated funds have diminished by 34%, and WSU officials are bracing for more reductions as the state still needs to fund another $800 million.
Former WSU student Frederick Russell appeared in Spokane court today to appeal his conviction of vehicular homicide stemming from the 2001 accident that killed three Washington State University students. A ruling on the appeal may take several months. Russell was convicted in 2007 of killing Washington State University students 21-year-old Brandon Clements, 21-year-old Stacy Morrow, and 21-year-old Ryan Sorensen, and injuring three other Washington State University students in a drunk driving accident on June 4, 2001. Russell was driving eastbound on Highway 270 between Pullman and Moscow when he tried to pass another car in a no-passing zone and crashed head-on into the car the six Washington State University students were in. A jury convicted Russell on 3 counts of vehicular homicide and 3 counts of vehicular assault. Russell is serving a 14-year sentence. The lengthy sentence is partially because Russell jumped bail and was a fugitive for several years before he was found living in Ireland. When he was finally extradited to the U.S., Russell said that he had fled because he believed his life was in danger and he did not believe that he would receive a fair trial. At sentencing, Whitman County Superior Court Judge David Frazier said, quote, "You were grossly irresponsible. You are going to get the maximum sentence under the law. You deserve it. It's as simple as that," end quote. Russell's attorney, Dennis Morgan, said he believes the judge improperly closed the case during jury selection in trial court. Morgan said the judge left the courtroom to discuss items with jurors in his chambers. Morgan also took issue with the search warrant associated with the blood draw on Russell after the accident, which revealed his blood alcohol limit to be 0.12, one-third above Washington's 0.08 limit. The appeal brief also contested the police pursuit of Russell into Idaho.
Whitman County officials say an $85,000 deficit for the projected 2011 Whitman County budget may increase by $100,000. In reviewing numbers from the original 2011 draft budget, County Commissioner Michael Largent said many of the figures do not match up and will need to be amended. As of Monday, County Auditor Eunice Coker could not yet tell how the changes would affect the final budget. But the $185,000 budget gap is much smaller than the $600,000 deficit commissioners faced when drafting the 2010 budget last year. Coker says that problems with the 2011 budget could have arisen partly from a loss of institutional knowledge when commissioners did away with the county finance department this past summer.
Moscow City Supervisor Gary Reedner updated the Moscow City Council's Administrative Committee on Friday's proposal by the Washington State University Parking and Transportation Services Department to end the school's annual $70,000 annual subsidy for the Wheatland Express. The bus service connects Moscow and Pullman and provides free service to University of Idaho and WSU students. Reedner said the original intent of the free service was to provide transportation for students taking cross-listed courses.
It's of particular interest to the city of Moscow because the amount of funding that supports that service from both WSU at $70,000 and Idaho, University of Idaho at $70,000, that contract is utilized as a soft match for regional public transit to support the Moscow Valley Transit Program to some extent. So whenever there is a discussion that perhaps that service is going to go away, there was one back in 2007 that was essentially some funding changes were made, student fees, some things were, extra monies were kicked in, and so that it's been pretty steady ever since that time. With the budget issues they're having at Washington State University, they're looking at whether this is a program that they can continue with. The idea was, or at least the information was, that this group was going to meet last Friday, formulate a recommendation, and then send it up through administration to the president. There was some information. I know Walter Steed made a few phone calls. He'd been involved in the 2007 discussion. The mayor made some inquiries. We made some inquiries at the staff level and found out that the administration's, the president's offices, President's offices at both the University of Idaho and WSU indicated that that issue was still being discussed. We were assured by the Washington State President Floyd's office that no decision would be forthcoming on Friday and that they would allow us at least input, providing information and that sort of thing before a final decision was made.
That was Moscow City Supervisor Gary Reedner at yesterday's Administrative Committee meeting.
Changes to the first phase of Moscow's Intermodal Transit Center were discussed yesterday at the City Council's Administrative Committee meeting. Community Development Director Bill Belknap said the project, which could see the construction of a transit hub in Moscow, has been divided into two phases. The first phase initially focuses on site selection and preliminary design, while phase two looks at final design and construction. However, Belknap is recommending including National Environmental Act environmental reviews to the first phase in the first phase, which may be required by the Federal Transportation Administration in order for the agency funding to be used for design and construction of the facility. The environmental review, which will cost about $8,000, which was originally included in phase two of the project. The city of Moscow was awarded a $1.5 million U.S. Department of Transportation grant in October for the proposed facility, which would serve as a central transportation link for pedestrians, bicyclists, and city buses, taxis, and intercity bus service. Belknap explains the different phases of the project.
Level one would be generally looking at all and any available sites that at least would meet the size requirements. Then we'd move down to level two, where we'd look at a more detailed review of up to five sites and to screen those on our site selection criteria, and then ultimately select two of those to continue on to what we're considering our level three assessment, where we'd have our top two finalist sites, where we'd go through the full traffic impact study, the facility schematic plan, the development cost estimate, and ultimately rank those two and end up with a preferred site that would be selected. At that point, we would finalize a more detailed concept plan and then ultimately end up with a very detailed construction cost estimate at the end of the project. So this is kind of our next stage. We've completed the facility scoping and programming. We're now moving into that site selection stage, and that's the process by which we'll be continuing through the project. In your packet is a copy of the site selection assessment criteria for both level two. Oh, I didn't include that. Sorry. Both level two and level three assessments, and they include various characteristics about cost of development, potentials for environmental assessment, proximity to the various transit service providers, ingress and egress, safety, proximity to the city's pathway and trail system to provide that interconnection between pedestrians and cyclists, and the ability to accommodate the other programming aspects of the facility. So the technical advisory committee and consultant team will then be working through the level two and ultimately the level three assessments to bring forward a recommended preferred site for the project.
Moscow Community Development Director Bill Belknap. Belknap says city staff would like to implement phase two by August of next year, which would be followed by a design phase ending by February 2012, when construction bids would go out. With that timeline, he says construction would be hopefully completed by the end of 2012. The University of Idaho has received a $1.2 million leadership grant from Micron Corporation. The money is to be used for research in Idaho communities to analyze barriers in science, technology, engineering, and math. The four disciplines together are collectively known as STEM. Dean of Graduate Studies Jerry McMurtry said the main goal is to start focus groups across the state with community members, parents, teachers, and school administrators in order to get a perspective of where STEM barriers are in communities. The 12 randomly selected communities are Boise, Camas County, Idaho Falls, Jerome, Kamiai, Lewiston, Melba, Northern Gem County, Pocatello, Post Falls, Priest Lake, and West Jefferson. Past STEM research focused on the current students, but now it is going to focus on what grant administrators say is the root of the problem, the communities where students were raised and how students were brought up. McCarthy says, "We hope that we can collect some data that will allow us to build different initiatives to try and make changes in those communities. The leadership grant is spread over 4 years, and much of the money will go to training the students who will be involved in conducting the interviews and focus groups in the 12 communities across the state." Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, scattered snow showers tonight, 50% chance, mainly before 10 p.m. Areas of fog after 10 p.m., otherwise cloudy, low 30. West winds 15 to 20 miles an hour, gusts up to 30 miles an hour. 30% chance of snow showers tomorrow, mainly after 10 a.m. Patchy fog before 10 a.m., otherwise mostly cloudy, high 38. West winds 10 to 15. New snow accumulation less than 1 inch tonight and less than half an inch possible tomorrow. 20% chance of snow showers Wednesday night, cloudy, then gradually becoming partly cloudy with a low of 28. Partly sunny on Thursday, high 33. Mostly cloudy Thursday night and Friday, low 26, high 32. Currently fair skies, 38 degrees in Moscow. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. If you want the KRFP Evening Report and most news gathering at KRFP to continue, please contribute to KRFP when you get a letter asking for donations. I'm Lee Robartis with Susan Austin. Have a good night. Coming up is Change Surfer Radio, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. This is KRFP Moscow.